Hey, don't forget to check out our great sponsors at soscustomtees.com. It's the only place to get official merchandise of the Double Dropkick Show. That's right, soscustomtees.com.
Hello again, everybody. This is Lance Russell with Championship Wrestling with another big week. Join us right now.
Tell you what, boy, McDonald's, they make a heck of a cup of coffee, don't you think?
I'm going to tell you, McDonald's, to me, they have really messed up because I ordered one of their drinks the other day, one of the cappuccinos.
Well, there you go.
Takes like 3 hours, but the coffee's the same way. They all making it at the same machine,
right.
And they don't clean it but like twice a decade.
Well, that's no different than my personal coffee maker then.
That's very true.
I wash it out before I make coffee. But do you actually, every day, do you wash the coffee pot out with a scrubber and everything?
Well,
I fill it up with water. I swish it around. I toss the water. I fill it back up.
We have the Keurig. And we just got I've been looking for this for a long time. And I just found the official Keurig refill pod for ours.
Uh-huh.
And when I put that thing in there, it opened up a whole another set of settings. Like, I can now make my coffee strong. I can do bigger sizes.
Huh.
It's opened up a whole new world for me.
You mean instead of the cup, it's like the little filter thing that you put coffee in?
Yeah, because what happened was I spoke at an event, and part of my gift bag, along with financial compensation, but I got a little gift bag, and they had coffee beans.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, I need to get me a coffee grinder because I just love coffee.
Oh,
you know?
I do too. Yeah.
I'm not one of those people. I don't know the difference between the blonde and the roast.
No, I don't.
I just like it. I mix it all together. But I got the grinder, and then I'm like, well, I need the little thing. And I bought the ones that don't work with my Keurig, that's good branding.
It really is. It's smart. I don't have a Keurig. I don't. Because I make a pot at a time.
Yeah.
I drink the whole pot. I drink half calf because I drink a whole pot of coffee at a time. And I found that it was like, as I got older, I could really feel it, you know, affect, like I could feel my heart jittering and, you know, my whole body, I'd get the jitters. Plus, I'd have to poop. You know what I mean? But so I started drinking half calf and it's great. I drink a whole pot now and it's like drinking a half a pot of coffee.
The catch 22 with me is, you know, over the last like 4 or 5 months dealing with some anxiety, and caffeine like makes that 10 times worse.
It does. Yeah, it does. Boy, but I'm like you. I enjoy coffee, but I'm not I'm not an aficionado.
No, I just like drinking.
I drink half calf Folgers, you know.
And I just, you know, do you drink yours black?
I usually put a little cream in it.
I mean, I do. I do bulletproof coffee.
Right.
And
I've had that.
And
tell you what I like to do.
Okay.
Is a couple of scoops of hot chocolate in the bottom of the thing, pour the coffee on it, stir that up, a little bit of creamer, just, you know, man. We call it redneck cappuccino.
Can I get you to be honest right here? Do you get the flavor?
One time in college, but I needed the money.
Do you? Ironic you say that, considering what we're going to be talking about. No, my question is, do you get the flavored creamers?
Sometimes. Not always. I tell you what I bought the other day it was a white mocha.
Mm-hmm.
White chocolate mocha.
Yeah.
And it was great. I drank all. I bought, they made one that tasted like Reese's.
Yeah.
Reese's cups the other month, and it was too much. Like, I don't like sweet.
Oh.
I don't like the sweet. I remember going to Krispy Kreme one time, and they had a coffee where they put a shot of the glaze in the coffee. And I was like, oh, this is going to be. We were on vacation. How great is that? It's going to be coffee that tastes like a Krispy Kreme glazed donut. And then you realize it's basically just powdered sugar, you know.
And your point?
I don't like sugar in my coffee.
Oh.
And I thought that it was going to be incredible, and I didn't like it.
So, you know, my family and I, we've been trying to eat better, you know, just do stuff like that. So I don't.
You look wonderful.
So we don't. I've lost 25 pounds.
I can tell, man. I can tell. Like, it looks like 22 of it was in your chin. Cause that's
I'm down to four. Down to four chins. But we don't get the creamers anymore. I use almond milk, and then we've got stevia instead of sugar, and that's pretty good.
You ever put MTC oil in your coffee?
This has got coconut oil on it. I've had the same thing, but
you
like
to be careful with the MTC oil.
Yes.
Your body, as you may know, as you may have found out already,
yeah,
can only process like a tablespoon a day, and anything more than that, it expels as waste. Very quickly.
Yes. Yes.
And not waste of the number one variety.
What are you saying? Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Whitman.
And it may be hard to believe, fans, this is the wrestling podcast. We talk about the wrestling you grew up with, the wrestling you need to watch now, and as you have just realized, stuff. And Mark and I have not seen each other for over a month. We had an ice storm. I was traveling. And so we are back. This is one of our favorite episodes where we just kind of catch up, shoot the scat.
Can I tell you that you made the decision that day? Like, I probably don't need to go because the roads are really bad. And then I was later on, I was like, well, maybe I made the wrong decision. Pulled the news up and realized there had been like five or six wrecks. Like, somebody flipped a car.
Yes. Yeah.
Right down the road from here because the roads were so bad. I think at that little turning.
Right.
That circle that they put in up there on, was it Wells Highway?
Yeah.
So I think somebody flipped a vehicle there.
I wouldn't be surprised. Now, up through here, Highway 24 was pretty clear, but it, you know.
I didn't mean to interrupt your spiel about shooting the stuff and shooting the scat.
No.
This is our fourth anniversary, and that's a glimpse of what we actually.
Yeah. Well, this is actually not our fourth. It is our fourth.
That's going to be the next.
This is our fourth anniversary.
Yeah, February. We celebrate the Double Dropkick Show.
Yeah, I mean, so other people, you're buying chocolate and flowers. So we don't celebrate Valentine's Day. Right. It's Double Dropkick Show month.
It is. Well, that and Black History Month. Let's be fair.
That's very, you know, very true.
There is a slight chance. A slight chance that Martin Luther King Jr. did more with his life than you or I have. A slight chance that he might have had more of an impact than we did.
I under normal circumstances, I would debate you. Not on that, though.
You'd be dumb, too.
I'm not going to debate
you. And I'm not
you.
Even being funny.
No.
When I say this, that he legitimately is one of my heroes.
Yeah.
Legitimately in life. Is one of my heroes. I always respected the fact that no matter what people did or said to him, that at the end of the day, he would always say, but I still love you.
Yeah.
And I thought, how has that got to be for somebody? Because there's a lot of rubes out there who make hatred a hobby. Mm-hmm. I've never understood that. I've never understood how you could hate anybody so much that you need to join a club where you can sit around and talk about how much you hate people. But that they would do that, and that they would bomb churches, and I'm being dead serious.
Yeah,
like I'm not, and still, like there was this man that was such a man.
Yeah.
That he could say, "I still love you."
Right.
How do you like? Yeah. It's got to be infuriating.
Yeah.
To hate somebody, and them, and you do everything you can to make this person be who you say that they are and what you want them to be, and still at the end of the day they would say, I still love you.
Yeah, the Bible calls that heaping coals on your enemy's head.
Right. It's so admirable to me that he would be that way.
You know,
and I know he's not the only
right.
the only reason that we celebrate it, but that is, you know, he's pretty prominent.
And
so I've been told he's fairly
right. And we were talking earlier, and you just mentioned a situation where you had to think forward.
Right.
And you had to think, if I do this, then this is going to happen. This
right, the snowball effect.
And you think about somebody like Dr. Martin Luther King, who, when they start, you know, their first actions and their first boycotts, he's got to know in his mind, people are going to throw stuff at my house.
Right.
They're going to shoot at my family. I am probably going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do it.
And he did it anyway. Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you ever get a chance to go to the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, it's incredible.
We had no intention of talking about Black History Month.
No, we did not.
But I just, But and I tell you, I like Malcolm X too. I was a big. I've read the autobiography of Malcolm X twice. I think he's a fascinating human being.
Yeah, you know? And Malcolm X again, one of those guys that later on in his life and career, kind of coming to this realization as he went on a pilgrimage and he's seeing these these white Muslims and he's like, man, maybe there's a, and he starts changing.
And that's why he's such a fascinating human being.
Yeah. If
like people hear about this one, but like I said, I've read the book by Alex Haley twice.
Yeah, right.
The autobiography of Malcolm X. I think it's so good. And the arc of his life is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
How he came to believe at different points. How he came to believe what he believed at different points in life. Because I hear a lot of times people will talk, well, this guy, he believed this, not Malcolm X, but anybody, he believed this thing. I hear him say this with politicians a lot. And well, now it's 10 years later, and he says something completely different. Well, you know, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I don't always feel the same as I may have felt about something, even a few weeks or a few months ago. I mean, that's what you do when you're a person,
an adult,
adult. I mean, sometimes you hear evidence and you hear things that are presented to you differently, and you say, "Man, maybe I need to rethink how I thought about this thing."
And look, it's the same thing with Malcolm X. He makes these changes and knows I'm going to make these changes, and I'm
going to
die.
And it's I mean, he very much found out a lot of things about Elijah Muhammad and started speaking out. And I mean, it's all detailed in the book what he found out.
Do you remember going to see the movie in high school?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, it was just fascinating.
And that's kind of what prompted, like, I read the book after I saw that movie. And then a few years ago, I found it in a box of books and took it out and read it again. It was equally as fascinating to me.
Yeah. People used to want to talk to me about, well, why do we have to, and I just don't even want to have that conversation.
No,
why do we got to have Black History Month?
Yeah, I don't entertain that type stuff. It's not.
All right, so let's talk about, that's a good segue, because tonight, we're recording this February 15th. Tonight, Black Panther opens.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a good tie-in, didn't?
So, Chadwick Boseman, the lead character, from this area.
He's a friend of mine's cousin.
Yeah, Travis Webb. Mm-hmm. But he graduated from Hanna.
Right.
And so you've got this movie from pre-ticket sales. This is going to be a hit. This is not going to be like anything people have seen. You know, Drake and I are going tonight to see it. But I saw, you know, from a black person's perspective, I just saw this great Facebook post. You know, after tonight, there'll be kids. They won't have to be like a black child is not going to have to be Captain America, not going to have to be Batman, Superman. They can like, man, I'm Black Panther.
Right.
You know what?
Yeah,
I saw probably about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, they didn't reintroduce him. They started a new Black Panther series, and it was incredible. It was like my favorite comic,
really,
at the time.
I never read it,
and just got out of it. But I thought that his portrayal in Civil War was great, and I think this movie leading into Infinity War is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm more excited about the fact that the guy's from Anderson. To me, the black cast and whatever, I think that's cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. But, like, it's not a thing for me. Like,
right.
I'm not like, oh, well, it's just going to be a good movie. Like, I mean, that's just the way I look at try to look at stuff like that. I mean, I think I'm always open about the fact that I try to improve in my life.
Right.
Every day.
Right.
You know, about things like that. So I tried to I see it as a movie that I'm looking forward to see. Like, the fact that it's a predominantly black cast has...
For me,
It doesn't make me want to see it more, and it just is going to be a good movie. I mean, that's
I go see these movies, and, you know, no matter what. I go see them on the Thursday night.
I'm just as excited to see this as I was seeing Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
There's the same level of excitement because I know it's a Marvel movie. It's going to be great. And it looks like it looks visually like just an incredible movie.
Right.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
What's going to be funny and awesome tomorrow is kids going into school, Googling Wakanda, trying to write reports on this great country.
Right.
And,
right.
Man, they, why aren't we trading with them and all this stuff? And right. That's going to be.
And let me say this. If you're like, it was so, because it goes back to you hating somebody so much that you got to make a hobby out of it, get in a club. That uh-huh. these people that are like, we're going to get together and give it bad reviews.
What in the world?
What don't you? God darn, ain't you? Get a life. I think William Shatner said it best.
Get a life.
Get a life, man. I mean, what is wrong with these idiots, man? And it's not just a racial thing.
Yeah.
It's the D.C. people.
Right.
What's wrong with these people, man?
I mean, everybody knows I'm a D.C. guy through and through.
Oh, yeah.
It's game over.
Uh-huh. But Marvel is whooping that tail in the movie.
Because this is no offense to Black Panther. He's a D-level character.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about to set box office records.
Yeah, exactly. And DC can't do it with the big three.
Yeah. They can't even get Superman's mustache off.
Right. And Marvel, due to rights and stuff, who owned different stuff, had to use, Iron Man and Thor and Cat, those were all C and D level characters.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody was reading those titles. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I've never met anybody that had ever read a Guardians of the Galaxy comic book before that movie came out.
And now they're selling Guardians of the Galaxy Halloween costumes.
Right. They adapted to what they had to do, and they stopped. Now they've got the rights back, and Wolverine's alive again, which is great.
And now... Yeah. Now they're going to be able to kill off some of the other characters, and the X-Men are going to be able to come on in.
That's right. Oh, I can't wait, man.
Oh, it's going to be.
Wait. The Guardians of the – if you got the X-Men, let's be honest, do you really need the Guardians of the Galaxy anymore?
Listen, didn't the Inhumans, that TV show
– Yeah, I think so. The what is it, X-Force or X-Factor? What's the movie that's coming?
X-Factor, I think.
The horror movie that they're putting out. God, have you seen the previews for
that? I have. That looks pretty good.
Oh, man, it looks incredible, man.
They're
genuine. From what I heard.
Wait. Yeah. It's a movie. Yeah,
it's a movie that's coming out. They had such a strong response to the trailer that came out that kind of presented it as though it was going to be a horror film, that they actually went back and reshot some stuff to make it more scary. And kind of up the horror. Yeah, man, that's awesome.
Oh, my word.
This is what I hear anyway. Because I saw the trailer for it and was like, this looks kind of spooky.
So I wonder if that's all going to tie in or if that was Fox.
I think it may have been. Well, I don't know.
But now it's all about to be under the same.
Yeah, I don't know, to tell you the truth.
You also told me you've been.
But just for the record, I love black people.
I love them all. Love them all.
No, I was just trying. I was being funny there. But,
you also told me you've been watching and reading some other things too, and dare I say, contrasted styles.
Yeah, like all three, you're kind of contrasting styles.
So, what you been reading?
Helter Skelter.
Now, is this the one by the lawyer?
Yeah, by Vincent Bagliozzi, who was the. The prosecuting attorney. In the Tate LaBianca murders. Yeah, well, that was a great book, man. My pop had always told me he read it, and he was always told me how good it was. And then when Manson died, I guess it kind of sparked this curiosity again in everybody, because it had sort of been this dormant thing that everybody knew about. But yeah, it just prompted me to pick the book up and give it a read. It's interesting, man. Like I'm. There's more, like you always hear about the Tate LaBianca killings, but you don't hear about this other string of the people that weren't rich and the people that weren't famous.
Right.
That there's a string of bodies.
Yeah.
That is associated with that fame.
There are, I haven't read the book, but I saw I've seen multiple documentaries, but I saw they did a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there are enough connections to take you down the rabbit hole a little bit.
Well, I know what you're talking about with where Manson was at the place where they studied brainwashing and stuff like that.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. What are you talking about?
I'm just talking about other people who are connected to the people who were killed.
Like who? I mean, talk to me.
I mean, off the top of my head, I can't remember. I do. I mean, but like there's some connections there.
Reading the book. You think you know more about it than.
No, I mean.
No, there's a. Well, because there is like this theory that he was at this prison where they did a lot of brainwashing studies, and everybody will say, well, they did. But what you don't understand, like if you just read it on the surface, yeah, he was at this place after he was arrested.
Right.
And after he was tried. They didn't teach him to brainwash people. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know how he did it.
Right, right. And he was the instructor.
Right. Yeah, they weren't teaching him. They were learning from him. But it's so interesting to hear the way he talked to these people and the way he went about brainwashing people. And some of that is in the part of the book that I'm reading right now because I've got to the point like where Susan Atkins has started talking and telling her side of the story, and they're kind of using her, but. It's the way the book is written is great, man. Like it finally shifts to a first person perspective, like about a quarter of the way into it. But the first part is basically there's this house,
yeah,
and this is just the way he writes the story is great. There's this house, and here's who lived here, and here's what the housekeeper walked in and found,
yeah,
and then there's this other house. And here's these people did, they were last seen here, and then their kids got to calling looking for them, and they went in, and here's what they found.
Yeah.
And here were the police detectives that showed up on the scene, and here's what they did when they got there. And it's so, like, you can just tell, like, this is the basis for, like, every crime show, the CSIs, all that, like, this, like, you see.
Yeah.
It's like going back and watching Apocalypse Now. Mm-hmm. And realizing the effect that movie had on pop culture way movies were made.
Right.
Like, if you've never seen Apocalypse Now, and you go back and watch it through the eyes of movies for the last 40 years, and you can see how much of what you see in films is based on Apocalypse Now and how much it's been, whether it's a narrator telling you stuff that you don't quite understand until an hour later. I mean, it's just the way the movie's shot. And it's the same way reading Helter Skelter, that it is the blueprint for every one of those police TV shows that you watch. They're laid out, the way that this book was written. It's that alone, it makes it such a cool read to see the effect that this thing has had on true crime. And because it was one of the original true crime novels. In Cold Blood, obviously, by Truman Capote.
And now there's a whole section at the library.
Yeah, and
on this genre.
And there's so much drivel to wade through.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But like some of those I love true crime anyway.
Yes.
And a lot of that is my background, I think, with my family. But there's a really good story that will be told one day.
Yeah.
Homicide investigation my father worked on.
Really?
He and I we've like talked a lot about how to get this together and get it out. Cause it really, I'm not even going to share it here, but, it is a fascinating story and the way I'll tell you over lunch.
That'd be awesome. Story,
Cause I don't want it documented, but it is. And we've talked about like trying to shoot some YouTube videos or something just because it's such a fascinating story and the way they caught the guy
me hooked.
Yeah, it's a good story, man, and I think eventually he and I will figure out a way to tell that story.
So your fascination with law enforcement, not just in the books you're reading but also the shows you're watching.
Yes.
One of the great
you're talking about like three completely from Black Panther to Helter Skelter to where we're going now.
How they captured the law enforcement community of a small Georgia town, and just the corruption of the city officials.
A hot night in the city.
How it was hard for the law enforcement officials to separate you know, the law from, you know, what they were being pressured to do.
Uh-huh. Locals, like local level town politics.
Yes, yes.
And people who, you know, lived on the fringe of society.
That's right, right.
Really, we're just trying to make a living.
Right.
Doing the best they could.
And he was making their way any way they can.
You know what I mean? And they were like modern-day Robin Hood.
But you have this – you're coming out of this era where they have a way of life. And it's a very cultural thing.
Right. And that way of life is eroding.
Yes.
You know? And there's still pockets around here where people almost – I mean, no joke – still.
Right. And there are shows about this lifestyle. Yeah. I mean, real still life
today.
Shows.
Yeah, real
but today. But Dukes of Hazzard was the first.
Dukes of Hazzard laid the blueprint for those types of shows that you're seeing today about rum runners and moonshiners.
So what got you back into Dukes of Hazzard?
I found it at Walmart. Like, we were just talking about it at work, me and a buddy of mine. Because, I grew up loving that show.
Yes, sir.
And
yes, sir.
My mom even said, like, a few weeks ago because I had told her, I was like, I picked up, you know, some Dukes of Hazzard. She said, oh, man, when you were a kid, she said it was Dukes of Hazzard wrestling. That was all you cared
That's
about.
Right.
You know. So I was just at Walmart, and they had the first three seasons in one pack.
Yeah.
So I picked them up. And
possibly the only good seasons.
No. They're not the only good seasons.
The best seasons.
Oh, yeah, probably the best. Yeah, most, if you look up, like, the best episodes, most of them are from the first three seasons.
See, my brother had a Catherine Bach poster when we still shared a bedroom when we were younger. And that thing disappeared. I don't know if my mom.
I'm sure.
But there were periods in my life where, like, when we moved, I'm like, that poster. Because we saved all our other. I got to find that poster. But yeah, Dukes of Hazzard, I remember being in college, and this would have been 94, 95, because my parents didn't have cable yet. And it came back on TNN, and they were building it up, and they were going to start from the beginning. And we did a viewing party the night that episode one came back on. And I'll be honest, like, we watched it, and it was like, and this is like this a lot with shows from the
80s. I'm going to completely disagree with what you're saying, but go ahead.
But also, in my defense, the pilot episode is never the best episode.
Oh, no. It takes almost the entire first season before the characters become fleshed out the way you know and love them.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I saw that as I started watching it. Like, the Boss Hogg character is a lot more sinister.
Yes, yeah.
And a lot.
Roscoe!
Right, and not only, like, there's a episode with, like, the second episode where somebody opens a door. And he's sitting there with a young girl on his lap. I mean, he's a different character.
Yeah.
And Roscoe's a little bit more serious, and he's still goofy, but he's not bumbling.
Yeah.
Like he is. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
The first five or six episodes are not really the characters you remember loving.
I asked a friend who was from up north.
Uh-huh.
We were talking about this week.
I'm curious what he says, because I'll tell you what a friend of mine from Long Island.
I said, did you guys think that this is what we were really like? He's like, is this what you thought life was like in the South? He said, I didn't really care. I just enjoyed the show. You know,
I had a roommate one time that was from Long Island, and when he came down here, that is exactly what he said to me. He said, I'll be honest, all that I knew about the way Southerners were was Dukes of Hazzard, and I thought that's what I was going to come into down here.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I thought that everybody from up north lives in New York City. Like, he said, no, like,
right.
I live in a neighborhood that looks just like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and my wife
said the only place that's New York City is the city itself. Like, everything else is suburbs.
My wife grew up in an area just like I did, farms,
right.
And
right.
It's crazy.
Which you so that's why you know TV's lying.
So I'm just going to put this out there.
But I want to say something.
Yeah, please say something.
No, put it out there, and then I'm going to tell you my take on whether it holds up or not.
I want to put it out there. Mark and I are seriously considering doing a Dukes of Hazzard. Can I say this?
Yeah.
We're talking about doing a Dukes of Hazzard podcast.
Yeah,
there's not a podcast dedicated solely
no.
to the Dukes of Hazzard.
But and, if we did one, I'm just curious what the people would be, if people would be interested in us basically going through and watching every episode.
Right.
And recording, even if it was just 10 minutes, or you know.
Because I don't like those episodes where the podcast about the episode is longer than the actual episode.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. And it would require a lot of research into, like, what was going on. Because I watched one the other night. This is what I was going to say.
Okay.
Okay, you said it doesn't hold up as well. I completely disagree. I think it does hold up very well. And the reason that it holds up is because the stunts on the show were actually real stunts.
Right.
I watched an episode of The $6 Million Man recently because I liked it growing up.
Yeah.
And it did not hold up. There was a scene where Steve Austin, not the wrestler,
yeah,
the $6 Million Man,
yeah,
wrestles an alligator. Mm-hmm. And it was so fake and so phony.
Predetermined.
Right. It wasn't even an alligator. It was just a stuffed, like, it wasn't fighting back. It wasn't doing anything. And I watched an episode of the Dukes of Hazzard where they were in the swamp in Georgia and a girl fell overboard. An alligator got in the water and John Schneider wrestled an alligator. Wasn't a big alligator, but he had it by the, and they had like, they shot film of him underwater holding this alligator's mouth together, and it's his face. And they weren't using CGI back then.
There hadn't been invented.
It hadn't even been invented. He was in the water with this alligator, and it wasn't a big alligator. Don't get me wrong. But the car jumps. They wrecked over 300 cars in the process of making that. Just the General Lee. That's not counting.
I'm going to stop you right there. I am not going to have you tell me or our listening audience that car didn't make every single jump clean.
It did. I don't want to ruin it for you. But at one time, you know, at the beginning, there's a scene where it makes a really long jump. At one time, that held the world record.
Really?
For the longest jump done in a car. Yeah. For a good while, it held that record. I mean, I watched one where they jumped a moving train the other day. They were like, and that's why I think it holds up. Just like Smokey and the Bandit holds up.
You're right.
Which is kind of funny because I wasn't allowed to watch Smokey and the Bandit as a child.
Really?
Mm-mm. It has become one of my favorites, but yeah. You might have seen it as a child, but right. I was already a man before I got to see Smokey and the Bandit because my father didn't like the portrayal of law enforcement.
But he let you watch Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard was different because they were not sinister.
Oh.
He didn't like. That's what I remember anyway. I remember asking to watch it, and he was like, "No, we're not getting it. I don't like the way they portrayed the police in that." But Dukes of Hazzard, yeah, was different. I don't know why. I think he liked Enos. He was a fan of.
Do you remember when Enos got a spinoff show?
Yeah. I don't remember.
I would love to see some episodes of that.
Yeah,
he moved to Atlanta. No, it did not.
Yeah. But I would, yeah, I'd like to see it. Because he actually had it written into his contract that if that show didn't last, he could come back. And he did wind up coming back.
So Enos was played by a guy named Sonny Shrover.
And Possum on a Gumbush.
And one of my.
Which is the weirdest catchphrase.
One of my professors at Southern Wesleyan, she went on a date with him. Obviously, when he was nobody.
Really?
But that was her claim to fame. Huh. She's like, "Hello, I'm Professor such and such, and I went on a date with Enos." Yeah.
Allow me to say this.
Mm hmm.
James Best,
yeah,
his portrayal of Roscoe P. Coltrane,
yeah,
as far as comedic performances on a television show, after watching him and the fact that he created mannerisms that he stuck with, the continuity of the mannerisms, all of that, I love it, all of that stuff, and his commitment to that character, I would say he is as definable in that role. And is every bit as iconic in that role, even though he doesn't get the credit for it, as Don Knotts as Barney Fife,
right.
As Michael Richards as Kramer, as Lucille Ball as Lucy Ricardo. I think he's every bit as good with his comedic timing.
Yes.
The way there's a scene with him and Boss Hogg where Boss is crying,
mm-hmm.
and he hands Boss a handkerchief, but he's got his hand on the handkerchief, and Boss goes to blow his nose. And as he pulls back to blow his nose, Roscoe pops his hand and jerks the handkerchief out of his hand, and Boss Hogg blows his nose into his hand. And it was perfect.
There's
the
a
timing,
lot.
The timing. He was so good that a lot of people don't realize he was so good at what he did that he opened an acting school. And he trained other actors. And I can't remember the names right now, but they're actors that you've heard of.
Right.
Who went to his school. He's very, very underrated.
I would say, and so much great physical comedy that he did.
There was a scene the other day. You know, the fame, and we all tried it, and we all did the same thing that he did, where they would run and slide across the hood. So, you know, one of them slides across the hood, and Roscoe sees it. He goes and runs, and he jumps. And the way he hits the hood of the vehicle, you could, instead of hitting it at the right angle to slide, he jumps straight up, and he just comes flat down on the hood and bounces and rolls off on the ground. It was great.
So in college, my Nissan Stanza was parked, and I go to slide across the hood. And I go to jump, and my hip just sticks right in the fender or whatever.
You thought you were going to jump up on anything. I'll never know.
But I didn't think anything about it till like a couple days later. My dad's like, "What is this? What is this dent?" And I was like, "Oh, it's basketball." So, Dad, if you're listening to this.
He tried to duke's a hat. I remember trying on a hot day one time in shorts when I was a kid.
And I
will give my mother credit for this because she wouldn't do it often, but every once in a while, I'd ask her to roll the windows down.
Yes, sir.
And I would climb in the window, and she would let me do it, which I thought was pretty cool of her.
So one thing on Roscoe real quick about his great portrayal, when they did the Dukes of Hazzard movie, I believe Burt Reynolds is Boss Hogg. Pretty much everybody did.
Burt Reynolds is a good actor.
But the guy that played Roscoe, he didn't do Roscoe. He had to do a different Roscoe because he couldn't be James Best.
Right. And I didn't like that movie. Missed the point of the show.
I didn't like the movie
either. There's a difference between good old boys, rednecks, whatever you want to call them, who try to help everybody and come out over the bad guys at the end, and the movie where a guy like Roscoe actually is sinister, Boss Hogg is sinister, and they're making fun of.
Yeah.
This, and then to take Uncle Jesse and make him a pot smoker, that's not the character. Like, they'd have made,
they made a movie, and they're doing this with all these 80s shows.
Mm-hmm.
Chips, not a family movie. I haven't seen it. Dukes of Hazzard was not a family movie.
Probably not.
No. I mean, there's an unrated version of it out there.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's one of the things. But my brother
I saw it once, didn't care for it. And I guess if we do our Dukes of Hazzard show, we'll have to watch it. Like, I'm committed to watching every Dukes of Hazzard thing that there is out there. Like
even the reunion.
The reunions, all the made-for-TV Dukes of Hazzard movies.
So my brother and I, so one year for homecoming, our homecoming skit was based on Dukes of Hazzard.
Mm-hmm.
We won, by the way. John Schneider was at Walmart in Anderson. Not the good one, but the other one.
Uh-huh. The one on 28 Bypass.
That's it. We went and met him like 8 o'clock one morning. I got a bunch of signed stuff. Super nice guy. But I had a guy that I was in college with, obsessed with Dukes of Hazzard. I mean, obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been to all the little conventions, but like way too far. But my brother and I, when we were kids, we invented a game down in the basement of the house.
Uh-huh.
And the game was you got arrested. So like the area with the couches,
The boar's nest?
No. That's the jail cell.
Okay.
So if you're the Duke boys, you go to, get in the jail cell, and then Roscoe has a place, and he's going to go fall asleep. And the point is that you got to, it's almost like hide and seek.
Right.
Roscoe's going to count.
That's what I was going to say. Sounds a lot like hide and
but
seek.
You get up off the couch, and Roscoe's chasing you around the pool table and stuff, and then you had to jump back over the couch and be like, "Oh no, we weren't here." But the whole point was you wanted to be Roscoe, because in order to play the game, you had to do all the sound effects.
Oh,
and so we just
had to do all that.
And all right, let me ask you your opinion, and this means a lot to me. This will let me know a lot in your character. pre-Flash Roscoe or post-Flash Roscoe for you?
I haven't got to the post-Flash yet. Yeah. I'm still in the pre.
Yeah.
So I don't. I liked him with Flash.
I did. Yeah.
I liked the interactions with the dog. I thought that was his idea.
Really?
You know, to introduce a lot of that. They said was his idea. Said him and Sorrel Book, who played Boss Hogg, were so good together that they would just give him an outline of what they wanted to convey. And they would kind of improvise. You know, and you'd get there's like I always when Boss would be telling Roscoe what was going to happen to him if he didn't follow through with the plan.
Yeah.
And Roscoe would say the line.
Yeah.
And then Boss would, and you're gonna have me working down. You're gonna have me working night shift down at the plant. I'll have you working night shift down at the plant. You
know? Oh, you're man!
You're gonna bust me back down to private. I'll bust you back. And it was just the timing of those two guys, and apparently they were really, really close and really good friends.
Yeah.
Boss Hogg's commitment to that character. They said up until he died. When he did meet and greet conventions, he wore the fat suit and everything, and did the meet and greets in character.
Wow!
Because he loved, and he was always eating some. Boy, I can remember as a kid just wanting a sandwich that big.
Yeah,
one time
I was like, or pig's feet or something.
Yeah. Oh, he made pig's feet look appetizing. I've never had a pig's foot. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
never have I tried them, and don't know that I ever will. But I'd probably like
him. All right, so pardon my ignorance. Boss Hogg, was his primary income from the Boar's Nest, or did he have other – well, obviously he had his criminal activities.
Right.
But I didn't know if, like, he inherited money and just kind of had that to start with.
Well, he was a descendant of Jefferson Davis.
Jefferson Davis Hogg.
Yeah, that was Jefferson Davis, I guess.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know.
Well, his brother was Jefferson Davis.
Name. Yeah, that was his namesake, was Jefferson Davis. I don't know if he – but, yeah, I think he had made his money moonshining and then just got into various other
– because, like, he and Uncle Jesse used to be partners.
Yeah,
okay.
They were all –
there's so much backstory.
They were all the Ridge Runners. There's actually a great scene in one episode when – well, there's two great scenes. One, Jesse falls and hits his head and goes into a coma. And Daisy's in there with him, and like late at night, there's a knock on the door, and it's Boss Hogg, and he comes in with flowers, and he said, "I just want to check on Jesse," and he said, "Don't tell anybody I was here, but he really is my oldest friend." And then he leaves.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Don't tell anybody I was here."
Yeah,
you know. And it was kind of this sweet moment, and then there's a moment when the mob's trying to kill Boss, and he's staying with Jesse, and they're sitting under a tree talking, and like Jesse's whittling and stuff, and they're laughing, and Jesse's going, "You know, we've known each other so long, and we might be adversaries, but at least with you, I know who I'm dealing with."
Yeah,
and they laughed, and both of them were laughing about how much they like being one another's adversaries. So there's like this real,
right.
At the end of the day, you can tell there's a, you may be trying to get me back in jail.
Yeah.
And I may be trying to thwart all your schemes.
Yeah.
But it's nice knowing who your enemy, you know.
Right.
So that was cool. There's one when they think Bo and Luke dies and Roscoe cries. He's talking to Uncle Jesse and he said, "You know, I chase them boys every day."
When they thought they drowned.
Yeah. He said, "I chase them boys every day, and the truth is I did it because I knew they liked it. At the end of the day, I liked it too. But I never would do anything to hurt them."
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's always these little indications there. That I have an interesting fan theory, though,
okay,
that I've come up with
over
watching this. It's that Roscoe's not corrupt.
I don't think Roscoe is corrupt.
No, he's not. I mean, he's always in on Boss's schemes, and he is always trying to frame the Duke boys. But I have a theory that he's actually protecting the Duke boys from Boss by doing that. That he sets himself up to be a bumbling fool when he's actually smarter than he gives himself credit for. And even though he's following Boss's orders to keep his job, at the end of the day, he always makes sure that the Duke boys wind up with the evidence to clear themselves. And he always makes sure never to read them their Miranda rights.
So you're saying
so that there's always a loophole to get them out of anything. Because they'll say, don't you need to read them their rights? And he'll say, they know their rights. And he always makes sure he never reads the Duke boys their Miranda rights, so that there's always a loophole that they don't have to go to jail.
So without Roscoe, the Duke boys would have been in prison. Indeed, Roscoe P. Coltrane, the hero of the show.
That's my theory.
That's more plausible than Jar Jar Binks being a Sith Lord.
I agree. I really believe it. As I watch the show, I bet you, I don't know how many episodes I've watched at this point as I've started going through them, but 15 times somebody said, aren't you going to read them their rights? Because there's a couple of times he would arrest somebody that really was a criminal, and he would take the Miranda rights out, and he would say, make sure you read them their rights, because I don't want there to be any reason for them, for us to not be able to prosecute them. But with the Duke boys, they would ask him to read the rights, and he wouldn't do it.
I think that podcast is happening. Not now, but down the line. So Dukes of Hazzard is obviously a show we watched when we were kids that we want to go back and watch. A show that I did not watch, that I've recently started watching, is The Office.
I'm going to give you a revelation about myself after you talk about The Office.
And really what I want to, I mean, so I'm in season 3.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'm in season 4 now. I don't know. I'm starting to question the booking a little bit. But I'm going to tell you, there are things about this show. I love Seinfeld.
Uh-huh.
I love Seinfeld. But there are things about The Office that I'm asking myself, am I watching the greatest sitcom ever?
I know. It is that good. It really is that good.
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
This, when I am watching The Office, Jim, Pam, this is how it happens. This is real life. This is how people really are. This is how people... The only thing that stops me from suspending my disbelief is Michael Scott. Because he's cringeworthy. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're watching The Office, he makes me physically hurt some of the things that he says and does.
That was, you know, the premise of that show was... What if there was a sitcom where none of the jokes landed?
Yeah.
What if the jokes weren't funny and that was what was funny?
Yeah.
And he was that character.
Yeah.
Let's make a guy that tries to be funny but is not funny.
Yeah. and it is. It's hilarious. And, you know, they've introduced new characters.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jim and Pam. Where are you at with their...
They're seeing each other now.
Okay.
Jan has moved in with Michael, and that's...
She's nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got into it a few seasons in, and I remember I bought the first season on DVD, and I was kind of catching up that way, because I got the first two or three seasons, I think, on DVD. But anyway, my wife walked around the corner, and I was just binge watching it.
Yeah.
Because I was off for a few days.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching one episode after the other because this is the most hilarious thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And the very moment when Jim turns around to Pam and says, would you like to go out? Or however he wind up doing it.
Yeah.
And I teared up because I was so invested.
Yeah.
And like this, because I had been watching it for like 2 or 3 weeks, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they finally got together, and as soon as I did, my wife walked around the corner to ask me a question, and I was sitting there and she never sees me like that. She goes, what's wrong? And I went, Jim and Pam finally got together.
So I know this show is 9 seasons long.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard
later seasons are not going to, don't be, you know.
Right. So here's the thing. And does that happen with every show? Like the thing that I am digging so much was the unspokenness between Jim and Pam.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's the cat's out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go with it? Like I would have gone 5 seasons. Tease, 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 tease.
But that's what I like about that shit. to me, that was what was smart about it. Because NBC always had the will they want they formula.
Right.
You know, it was Sam and Diane.
Or, right.
And it was supposed to be that way with Jerry and Elaine.
Uh-huh.
And they decided, no, let's just have them be friends and
yeah.
remove that. They didn't want to make that
right.
show. Ross and Rachel.
Yeah.
And then for NBC to come out and everybody think that was what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And then for them to say, no, we're going to show you real. You just said it. This is how it really happened.
Yes, no, right.
Where they get together, they get married, they buy a house, they have a child. How you like it?
Spoiler alert.
You know.
You got to be kidding
but
me.
But to watch, instead of have that happen and then them break up and then them get back together and then them break, like, why do that? They've kind of flipped that formula.
But
Let's show right. the life of this relationship.
Right. And I think what I'll find out, I mean, I have read. See, I have read ahead or whatever.
I figured you knew that.
But it's this. It really you discover it's the story of Jim, who from the beginning is like, "What am I doing here? I can't." And he does. Right. He gets out. He gets the family.
Uh-huh.
He gets this great job. He creates something,
mm-hmm.
and that's. And there's not another show
and
like that.
John Krasinski, man, has flipped that. Like if you look at him, then, dude, he was almost Captain America.
Yeah,
and. To watch him play a SEAL, and he's this new movie he's got coming out. I can't remember the name.
He's doing Jack Ryan on Amazon.
Well, right.
That's a whole series.
But he and Emily Blunt have a film coming out where it's setting this post-apocalyptic thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah,
nobody
yeah.
can talk.
Yeah.
You can't make any noise because these things will
yes.
come after you if there's any noise. And it looks really, really intense. I don't know that I want to see it in a movie theater because it's going to be quiet.
Right.
And you know there's going to be people
like
talking,
me.
Like you. Oh, I wonder what's going on. They're playing on their cell phones. And I think it'll take me out of it.
Did you see the movie about with him and the Benghazi thing? Have you seen that? I haven't seen that either.
My nephew said it's really good.
He's incredible.
Yeah, he's a good actor. Yeah.
I mean, I would put that, like if you're asking me, who else could have done played him? Just him.
Well, I mean, who knows the answer to that? But
like he found
he is so like those little the quirky looks at the camera
yeah.
and stuff, and like the are you believing? Are you in on this? And like, can you believe this is happening?
Yeah.
Are you seeing what I'm saying? Just all that. Have you seen the Prison Mike episode? Has that one? You hadn't seen that? That's a classic, man. Where Michael Scott. Is trying to he wants to make sure nobody goes to prison, so he plays Prison Mike.
Oh wait, I have seen that. Yes, I have seen that because he finds out one of the guys is a former.
That's right.
Convict.
Yeah. That's right.
The episode I just watched was where Dwight is trying to outsell the website.
Yeah,
and they're sending him these messages, and Dwight's growing on me, man.
Oh yeah, he's a great character, man.
And I'm just gonna say this. Angela gets cuter and cuter by the episode.
She does. And I'll say this. I think Jim kind of bullies Dwight a little bit.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I could see why Dwight might feel the way he feels sometimes.
Right.
Jim, this good-looking guy who's got the good-looking girl, always picking on Dwight who wears his mustard yellow shirts. You know, but it's real life.
Right.
That's what happens. The guy that was a jock got the job.
And he's not doing
mean-spirited trying to hurt him kind
right,
of
right.
He's exploiting his quirkiness and he's just kind of picking at him a little bit. I don't think it's malicious.
Right. And I think he knows how Dwight's going to react. And I think if Dwight didn't react the way that he does, that's all the fun in it. Like
clearly.
Like cuz they did the one deal on like he put Andy's stapler in Jell-O one time. And that was it, because he saw Andy react, and he's like, homie, don't play this.
Almost, you know? Though, with the Dwight and Jim thing, it kind of goes back to being that Roscoe Duke boys thing, where Dwight likes it.
Yes.
Like, he's into it as well. He likes having that rival.
Right.
You know, and he feeds into it to keep it going.
Nah, that's good stuff. So, yeah, that's what I'm watching now.
But, you know, you talked about episodes and our shows like that not ending when the time was right. I mean, that was, I think, the beauty of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
They were smart enough to know, all right, we've reached the arc.
Yeah.
Let's not turn into Archie's Place.
Yeah.
Where you had, I mean, All in the Family was this great, iconic, and then it went on a few seasons too long. And
right.
It should have ended on a high note, but it didn't. It wound up ending on a low note where Edith died, and you know.
Yeah.
So I think they were smart to end it when they did, because they actually, I think The Office maybe went a season too long. Once Steve Carell left, it should have ended with that.
The thing that happens with sitcoms is you get used to, they're doing 20 to 22, 23 episodes a season. When you got to the end of Seinfeld, and especially Friends, I think the last season is maybe 12 episodes. Hmm. So you get into a rhythm watching a show, and then it's just like, okay, Thursday night, you're watching rerun, and it just throws off the whole rhythm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, all right, we're going to do 6 episodes now, and then 6 episodes. And I don't know, maybe I'm looking too much into that, but I think it's fascinating to see how much TV has changed. Because Dukes of Hazzard was appointment television.
Right.
It was
for me, as a 7-year-old kid, yeah. But we talked about this the other day, that it's nice. Like, I watched The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But every episode of The Walking Dead, nothing changes.
Yeah.
Nothing ends. I still have to watch the next episode of The Walking Dead. So you wind up devoting 10, 11, 12 years of your life.
Yeah.
Whereas with The Dukes of Hazzard, you can sit down, watch. You could pick out of the 7 seasons any episode and watch it. And unless it's one of 7 or 8 episodes that were to-be-continued episodes,
yeah,
you've watched a self-contained story.
Yes.
They establish who the characters are early in the show.
Yeah.
Here's the premise. Here's the MacGuffin. Here's what they're running from. Here's what they're trying to prove. And then it wraps up with a happy ending.
Yeah.
And you go on with your life. It's not.
See, even with The Office, I have been tempted to skip episodes.
Right.
But I know that in every episode, there's a breadcrumb of, in particular, the relationship between Jim and Pam.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to miss any of that. I know I'm into this show now, and I'm going to watch the arc of their relationship.
Oh, yeah, man.
And I don't want to miss any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to miss a thing. Speaking of not wanting to miss a thing, it's WrestleMania season. We get back to wrestling. You didn't want to miss a thing during WrestleMania season. Tell everybody what you did.
How long are we? Are we going to make this?
We're good. We're 57 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I signed up for the WWE Network.
Yeah. Did you get a deal on that for coming back?
Yeah, yeah.
What'd you get?
I got a month free.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got to watch the Royal Rumble for free.
What'd you think of the Royal Rumble?
I thought it was honestly the men's Royal Rumble match, specifically.
Yeah.
I thought it was one of the most well-booked Royal Rumbles I've ever seen.
I totally agree.
I really did. Like, I thought everybody's interaction kind of meant something. I think I've always thought, you know, a few years ago when Daniel Bryan was hot and he just got knocked off the ring apron.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't. You can have a favorite get eliminated from the Royal Rumble.
Right.
As long as it means something. And that year, it didn't mean anything. It was almost like a flipping the bird to the crowd.
Yeah.
And letting them know, well, we don't care what you think. Reigns is the guy.
Yeah.
And this year, almost everybody who came in looked strong.
Yeah.
When people got eliminated, those eliminations usually came from a rival.
Yeah.
Or because of an interaction with a rival. Or somebody they were trying to build up. And they just meant something.
Yeah.
Everybody's interaction that they focused on had a little story to tell.
And when you got down final 6, it's like, anybody can win this. Final 5, anybody can win this. Mm-hmm. Final 4.
Yeah.
Final 4 was, if I'm not mistaken, Nakamura, Balor, Reigns, Cena.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the internet, their head was about to explode.
Right.
And then Balor is eliminated. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh no, it's going to be Cena. It's going to be Reigns. Cena's eliminated. And I thought Cena, John Cena has so much settled into his role.
Mm-hmm.
It is brilliant. Tell me the last bad performance he had.
Oh, yeah. I've never had a problem with John Cena, man.
Yeah.
Never. I've always thought he stepped up when the time was right. And he enhances, whether you like him or you don't, dude's a he's a big star, and he looks like a big star. And when he puts somebody over, they stay. I mean, look at how many guys he's put over that have. I know there's some,
right?
But there's always that,
right?
Flair put guys over that didn't last. Hogan put guys over right. that didn't last. Savage put guys over that didn't last. Rock, Austin, Foley, Undertaker, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, all those guys put people over that didn't last.
Right.
So you can't hold it against him that some guys fizzled out. There's right. a lot of guys that got in the ring with Cena. I mean, Kevin Owens had one of the strongest debuts in that company in a long time because of John Cena.
And AJ Styles as well.
AJ Styles. And had it not been for Cena, specifically with Owens, though, mm-hmm. I think had it not been for Cena, he would not be in the position he's in right now.
Yeah, I think – and I think the joke is on everybody because Reigns is there in the end, and people don't people think, oh, yeah, man, we got over because what Reigns didn't win. I'm like, y'all don't understand. The spot you want isn't necessarily the guy that wins. It's the guy that everybody has to beat to get over.
Yeah.
Reigns is in the spot. Yeah. And somebody said the other night, man, Reigns needs to turn heel. I'm like, all right, explain this to me. The dude is already getting the biggest. When I've gone to WWE live show, he gets the loudest reaction of anybody. It's all booze.
Right.
Why would you turn him heel? You don't need to do anything with him.
But see, that's that mentality. I want him to turn him heel so I can cheer for him.
I don't understand.
Yeah, that's not being a heel.
Yeah.
That's not what being a heel is. Yeah. I've always said the role of heel and babyface has been reversed in that company.
Yeah.
And people don't even know it.
Yeah. And so to me, I love the Royal Rumble booking. I mean, I'm a Nakamura fan. I was happy that he won. I'm happy I'm getting Nakamura and AJ Styles.
Oh, hey, that's going to be a great match.
That's going to be a great match. But I'm happy that all the trolls who think they won because Roman Reigns lost don't understand that by Nakamura beating Roman Reigns is now in a more powerful spot than he's ever been in.
And it helped Nakamura
yes.
to establish. Yeah, I mean, like that. And whatever that is. But how about that shot from Lesnar to Strowman?
Yes.
God, man.
How awesome was that?
I mean, that was real, dude. And,
yes.
And that's why people like Brock Lesnar.
No.
Because there's that moment when you're like, oh, my God, this is what happens if Brock Lesnar gets
I'm with you, but just – I'm totally with you. I'm tracking. That was one of my favorite matches of the night. And even the trash talking, you know, Brock Lesnar was talking trash to Braun Strowman. And people were like, that's why people don't like Brock Lesnar. He goes into business for himself and he just doesn't get it. And I'm like, what?
No, you don't get it. Yes. Strowman hit him. Strowman
yes.
hit him with it. Dude, there's actually, if you go back and watch it, there's two shots to Strowman.
Yeah.
Everybody sees the one to the side of the face. Did you see the body shot that looked like somebody hit Strowman with a stun gun?
Oh, they put him down.
Go back and watch that. That's the shot that got him. He hit him with a body shot. He hit him with two punches.
Yeah.
The first one was on the way up with a real quick shot to the body, and then he popped him in the side of the head.
And I love Braun Strowman's response. I loved his response. He's like, we're not in there figure skating.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that he...
He handled it. He took it like a man.
That's why Braun Strowman is in the spot that he's in.
Right.
Because he's a monster of a man, and he gets it. And he's the one guy in there. If Brock Lesnar, I love Finn Balor. Brock Lesnar hits Finn Balor like that, his career's over.
It's over.
Career's over.
Absolutely.
He is knocked out.
I would say most of the guys on that roster, Brock Lesnar hits them like that, and they go down. Braun Strowman took a knee.
Yeah. That's why take my money.
Mm-hmm.
Lesnar versus Strowman at Mania.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I hope it does.
I mean, take my money because you got somebody in there with Lesnar that Lesnar knows and his opponent knows. We can go at it.
We can hit each other a little bit.
We can hit each other a little. Yes.
They work stiff with each other, man, and I like that. It was weird. I was thinking as I was watching so much stuff that I saw coming out of that weekend with people, pictures of themselves crying together, whether it be Bayley and Lita and just all, you know, the whole, and then you're like, what happened to Wahoo McDaniel? What happened to the guy that played football and that was a real athlete? And I realized they have those guys and nobody likes them.
Right.
They got Mojo Rawley. And they got Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
But there's something missing with that now.
Yeah.
that whereas with a guy like Wahoo or Dick Murdoch or Dusty Ray, any of those guys, man, Lex Luger, Vader that had that background, Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, all of them had this football background.
Yeah.
Or Terry and Dory Funk or the Briscoes who had
Pillman, even Brian Pillman.
Right, or that had the wrestling backgrounds. And they get those guys, and people reject them now because they're not living their dream. They're just businessmen trying to
make. They haven't worked their way up through the indies, which leads me to my next point. I'm the king of the Segway today. You notice that? I'm always king of the Segway. I need a shirt that says king of the Segway.
Segway style. King of Segway style.
Segway club.
Yeah. No, king of Segway style. That's the shirt.
I'm writing that down. Boomer, you'll be getting a... I love it. With Japanese lettering. Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you. I'll give you a commission on that.
I hope so. I hadn't seen anything yet, but
listen, I'm happy to report.
But I'm holding my breath.
I'm happy to report... we get two more patrons. Mark, you'll start getting a monthly cut.
Get out of here.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
Patreon.com.
If you guys are listening, two more people, I start getting $2 a month. Come on. Maybe not. You're giving me the Roscoe Boss deal.
Maybe a dollar.
You're going to give me the Roscoe Boss deal. Yeah. 70-30. No. 60-40. 70-30. Come on. 60-40. 80-20. All right, I'll take it.
But the response to Ronda Rousey, now I did not think, I didn't think the women's Royal Rumble was good.
No, I didn't either.
At all.
I didn't think it was all that good.
Because half of them laid outside the ring most of the time. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this.
Well, here's my thing with it. You have this whole revolution or evolution or whatever they're calling it of the women's division. And then and the point of it is these are real athletic women.
Yeah.
They're not bikini models. And the way that you celebrate that is by trotting out all the bikini models.
Yes.
And giving them high profile spots.
Yes. The joke's on everybody.
Yeah.
And then, so you're not going to be mad. Now, I was not mad that Tori Wilson and Kelly Kelly were participants.
I'm never upset about seeing them do anything.
But you're going to be upset about Ronda Rousey coming in.
Right.
Ronda Rousey is going to draw money. Mm-hmm. You're happy to see Tori Wilson. You're happy to see Kelly Kelly.
There's the reason, whether you like her or you don't like her. Here are the facts. You can dispute whether you like somebody. I can argue that with you all day long.
Yeah.
But here's what you can't dispute. Facts. The facts are, without Ronda Rousey, that match is not the main event.
Yes.
At the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
If a man had 12 MMA fights and only lost their last two and won the first 10 as quick and as fast and as domineering as she did, nobody would question his credentials.
Yeah.
She's an Olympic-level judo athlete.
Yeah. Bronze medalist.
That's real.
Yeah.
She's real. She's legitimate. Okay, she can't fight. Here's what happened. She wrestled everybody and she beat them. Then she tried to stand up and fight somebody. And she got beat.
Yeah.
She was not strong with a stand-up game. And then in her last fight, she tried to change her whole style to prove that she could do that. And she got beat.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
You know? But you can't take away her accomplishments because she lost a couple of fights. You know?
You cannot tout Brock Lesnar's MMA accomplishments and in the same breath deny Ronda Rousey's. Brock Lesnar, does he even have a 500 record? MMA.
Exactly. You can't say Mike Tyson would have been great, but Buster Douglas beat him that time.
Right. You can't.
And people don't do that. That's what I'm saying.
As Ronda Rousey came in and I heard the response and saw the response, I'm like, did anybody say, boy, I can't believe that Mike Tyson, he's taken away from Stone Cold Steve Austin's spot?
I can't believe. An even better thing for me is, we're going to talk about it in an upcoming episode, but nobody said, boy, they finally gave Andre the belt because he deserved it. And then Ted DiBiase stole his thunder.
Right. Right.
And if you don't.
Not one person, yeah.
If you don't understand why bringing somebody in, a boxer, then you don't understand the history of that company.
Yeah.
You don't understand that one of the biggest shows that Vince McMahon ever promoted didn't happen in the United States. It happened in Japan. He promoted on closed circuit here Inoki versus Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And nobody said, I can't believe Muhammad Ali's taking a main event spot.
Yeah.
Now, is Ronda Rousey on the same level as Muhammad Ali?
No.
Nobody's on the same level as Muhammad Ali. He is the greatest of all time.
People
throw that word around a lot, greatest of all time, and they got six greatest of all times.
There's one
greatest of all time, and that's Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
If you don't believe it, go back and watch some of his fights.
Yeah.
And that led to the creation of mixed martial arts in this country as we know it, and in Japan as we know it, that match. And it was co-promoted at Shea Stadium with Andre the Giant versus Chuck Wapner, who was the basis for Rocky, who got the shot. Is it Chuck Wapner? Anyway, he was the guy who got the shot against Ali that was a bum, that was nobody, that was just a prize fighter for years. And he went the distance with Ali. And he, you know, I mean, Ali beat him, but he did better against, and it kind of, and it created this deal, and he had to deal with Andre the Giant the same night as Inoki. And nobody said, why are these guys being brought in?
Right.
And taking other, everybody looked at it as a positive because it helped the company. And then WrestleMania, where you bring in one of the biggest mainstream stars of all time, Mr. T.
Right.
At the time.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but at the time. Huge mainstream. He had off of Rocky III, off of the A-Team.
Yeah.
And I understand he and Piper had their issues. That was because Piper didn't think he respected.
Right.
Wrestling, and he wanted to prove, but nobody said Mr. T is taking a spot. Jimmy Snuka didn't say, well, Mr. T's taking my WrestleMania spot.
Yeah.
He may have said it privately.
Yeah.
But Snuka was still out there, and they still all made money, and it was for the best of the company.
Yes. Yes.
And fans certainly weren't going, I can't believe Mr. T's here.
Right. Right.
When Mike Tyson came out and did the deal with Steve Austin, nobody said, I can't believe Mike Tyson didn't take a bump for Austin.
Right, right. You know. Crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff.
It's just a weird thing with fans, with this whole deserve it stuff. Asuka, it didn't take anything away from Asuka. It elevated her to me.
Yes.
For Ronda Rousey to shake her hand.
Yeah. Well, to try it elevated Asuka to say, I ain't going to shake your hand.
Right. Right. I mean, like, that's, to me, I don't think that it took anything away from anybody. I think it enhanced a moment. That's my opinion.
And there's been all sorts of stuff. Mickey James tweeted something yesterday. Listen,
I saw that the next day when, like, the women were tweeting stuff out.
Brilliant.
And
kudos to them.
I saw news reports from people that consider themselves wrestling journalists. Well, except for the few that actually are wrestling journalists, like Dave Meltzer, who were smart enough to get it.
Yeah.
Even somebody asked him, what about this? He's like, do you really believe that they're doing something that they're not supposed to? Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You consider yourself to be smart, and you don't understand that all these women are working you?
Yeah.
They're promoting the fact that Ronda Rousey's in that company now.
Yeah.
And we don't know. She may fail spectacularly. She may be great. We don't know yet.
Let me tell you the kind of smart fans I need. And we'll close with this. You and I have not talked about this. So I'm at a show the other night. The very first match, the ring breaks within the first minute of the match. And they, you know, finish the match. They're trying to fix the ring. And it's probably a 30, 40 minute break after the first match. And I'm having to like go around and just try to keep the crowd into it. And I'm talking to people, just kind of do what I do while they're fixing the ring. And we're all talking about it. I'm talking to the ring announcer. I'm like, oh man, dude, I hope we don't lose the crowd. I hope we don't, man. I hope this doesn't kill our momentum. Cause this was EWF's a company that's built a lot of momentum over the last couple of months, and they're building up to some really great shows. And here's the thing. The fans were smart. In the sense of, you know what? under normal circumstances, this would be a time where we would be down. Our energy would be down. There would be disappointment. We're not going to do that.
Right.
As soon as this next match starts. And it helped that it was Big Country, and he has in more ways than one, a sizable fan base. Mm-hmm. And he had some guys there that were there to see him. And as soon as we come out of this break, Big Country hits, this group of fans goes nuts, and it elevated the energy of the entire crowd.
Right.
They didn't say, oh, man, what a ripoff, da-da-da-da-da. They said, you know what? We paid to see this show.
Right.
We're not going to hijack the show. We're just going to elevate the energy. We're going to participate as fans by enjoying and cheering.
We're going to play our part in this.
Yes.
We're not the show.
Right. And I'm going to tell you, dude, I sat there because I wasn't far from where these guys were. And I said to more than one person, I'm like, if you could take those three guys to every show. Because they were there times in the night they started the chant, but the chant fit. Mm-hmm. The chant fit the match. It was just great to see. And it was great to see fans who, you know, they weren't crapping on the wrestling. They were investing in these are characters they invested in. It was just fun to watch.
And the thing with companies like that and that have a fan base.
Yeah.
The people that come to every show, like, that's the dream. If you're an independent wrestling company and you got 7,500 people that'll show up for every time, they'll forgive that little stuff.
Yes.
They know it's not your fault.
Right.
They don't hold that stuff against you, man.
Right.
But if that happens in WWE, oh, God.
Yeah.
You got the casual fans there that, oh, that's not what I paid and pay to watch people fix a ring. You know, things happen. And the people that are loyal to you, the people that care about you, understand those kind of things.
Yeah.
And they'll support you and they'll stick with you. And as soon as the matches start back up, they're forgiving you, man.
Yeah. And I think in wrestling in our area, I think some people's loyalty is about to be tested. Mm-hmm. So anyway, hey, it's always great to catch up with Mark. We're 4 years in. We're getting ready. We're going to record our fourth anniversary episode. We got so much to do today, but we're just having fun, man. It's just great to be with my brother again and just great to catch up. You can catch up with us, man. You can go on Facebook. You can like our Facebook page. It's the Double Dropkick Show. If you're listening to this, you may or may not already be in our Facebook group. It's one of the largest wrestling-related Facebook groups on the planet, over 93,000 people. Well, I know what you're thinking. Heath, you guys have been at 93,000 for a long time. Why is your group growing? Because I have had to be removing people. I mean, there are so many people they don't care about wrestling. They're just posting non-wrestling related stuff, and I'm having to delete. Yeah. And I'm fine, you know, so whatever. Hey, also, don't forget, go our great sponsors, SOS Custom Tees. If you go like their Facebook page, you're entered into a contest every month. Jason Blackburn was the winner. He actually won an autographed Billy Gunn picture. Mm-hmm. Won that this month. And at the end of the year,
just by liking their Facebook,
all you got to do, and he could win 12 times.
Yeah.
He could win every month. So you like their page one time, you're entered to win. Don't forget, soscustomtees.com is where you can get all the Double Dropkick Show shirts. We've actually got, don't have confirmation yet. So if you're listening to this on Friday, February the 16th, don't have confirmation, but we got some coupon codes coming out for you guys where you get a deal by buying all of our shirts, and you get a special rate on that. You can talk to us on Twitter. I'm at Heath Mulliken.
If you buy a shirt, I'll give you a phone call.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
I'll give you 10 minutes. We can talk about whatever wrestling related you want to. You buy a shirt, send me your phone number. We'll have a 10-minute phone conversation.
So if you buy, all right.
Within reason. I ain't gonna tell you what I'm wearing or nothing like that. That'll cost you two shirts.
Let me tell you, I want to say this. I want to be very clear. That's the most shocking moment in Double Dropkick Show history right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm touched. I'm shocked. Because Mark Whitman does not. This is...
No. 10 minutes.
10 minutes. I hope we sell 100 shirts. I hope it's a month before you get to watch Deuce of Hazzard again.
And I'll tell you this too. He said, "Two more patrons. Two more patrons is what we need. Two more patrons. We got a nice book about the history of the Four Horsemen."
Yeah.
Written by Dick Bourne.
Yeah.
Takes you through the entire history. Everything that was done on television with the Horsemen is great. If you wanted to ever sit down, get on YouTube and watch the history of the Horsemen, you can take this step-by-step guide and look, okay, this happened on this episode.
It's a brilliant book.
You can watch it. You can watch the entire history of that company, of that faction that was televised, that's available on YouTube. Two more patrons, and we'll put everybody's name in a hat and give that
that book away. Can we do it at the end of the month? At the end of the month, all the patrons we've got, and we need two more.
There's
got
to be two more.
Got to be at least two more. A dollar a month. There's no better deal in wrestling.
I agree.
No better deal in wrestling that I know of ever. In the history of wrestling. So Mark's going to call you. So
except for Michael Hofer. If he buys a shirt, I'm not calling him.
Okay. I'm going to see him. this is Friday. I'm going to see him tonight.
I don't need him pissing in my ear about how I'm wrong about everything.
Now these deals are going to be like where you can buy all three shirts for the price of, like, two. It's some kind of code.
Really, really.
So are you going to give them 30 minutes if they buy all three shirts per purchase?
I tell you what, I think if they buy all three shirts,
yeah,
then me and you both call them together.
No, see, I'm not like that.
What you mean?
I'm not like that.
You're not like what?
I'm not as outgoing as you are. I'm not as personal.
You are the outgoing one.
I'm not as
personal. We'll give you a phone call. We'll call you. We'll give you 10 minutes to talk to both of us.
All right. Can I spring something on you right quick?
Uh-huh.
I wasn't going to do this, okay? But I'm going to spring this on you. I hope Boomer doesn't care. So at the end of the year, all the people that have liked SOS Custom Tees and whatever, and never mind, I'm not going to share it. I'll tell you off air. But anyway.
Are they going to get something cool?
They're going to get an experience they'll never forget. The overall winner. Like, we're going to take all 12 monthly winners and draw. What were we talking about? Yeah, buy shirts. Mark will give you a phone call starting today.
Mm-hmm.
Starting today. So if you buy a shirt.
What's today's date when this episode
is episode is airing on February the 16th, 2018.
Right. Anybody buys a shirt after that, they get a phone call from me.
Yeah. And you can ask him anything. Everything that
the only questions I won't answer are where I work at.
I was about to say that. And family related.
And family, yeah. I mean, nothing, you know.
Let's talk wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. I may go buy a shirt just so you'll answer my phone call.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
Now, you have to learn how to block your number.
Yeah, I will definitely have to. No, I don't think anybody's going to hurt.
So order a shirt, send him a message, and then we'll arrange the phone call. That's awesome. So happy. I'm so happy. And we do need more patrons. So if you're listening to this, it's only a dollar a month. And we're giving, especially if you live in the Carolinas, I am not just saying this. You get stuff on the South Carolina Behind the Scenes Report that you don't get anywhere else. I listen to all the other Carolina podcasts, and they're just telling you fluff. And they're doing polls like, oh, I think this guy will do that. Nah. Okay. Yeah. Because I built relationships. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm at 4 years in, baby. We're just getting started. Did we tell them where we were on Twitter?
Probably at the DDK show. I'm not on there very often.
Yeah. But if you buy a shirt, we'll tweet you out. So, hey, it's been a great 4 years. Many more to come. And as always, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mullican.
And I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.